And welcome to In-Game Chat for Saturday, August 3rd, 2013. This is Season 7, Episode 26. I'm Scott.
I'm James.
I'm Jeremy.
And I'm RJ.
And welcome to the show, guys. If you'd like to get in touch with us, our phone number is 334-272-9228. That is 334-272-9228. You can find us on Twitter at In-Game Chat, as well as over on Facebook. You can email us, everyone at ingamechat.net. We are streaming the cam feed right now through Twitch TV. And you can find us there and join us in the chat room live while we broadcast. Speaking of this week, we kicked off our YouTube channel, and we'll be uploading full episodes on the YouTube channel. You can find us again on YouTube at In-Game Chat, like we are everywhere else. And we're going to put full episodes on there, but we're also going to put some like gameplay vids and stuff like that. I'm thinking of doing my first run at Dark Souls and doing like a, I don't know, 20 minutes or 30 minutes of me playing Dark Souls with some commentary going on or something like that.
Can I commentary?
Yeah, well, it would probably be, yeah, very beneficial if you did.
Can I be the color man?
Oh, you'll be completely color man. By the way, we're completely censored on this station, but on our YouTube channel, that will not be the case.
Especially, you want to take some over-unders and how many times you buy it in those 20, 30 minutes?
I don't know. Yeah. You know, that's what we'll get. I know. Now that I've mentioned this, I actually have to do it because people kind of want me to see me do that now. They'd probably be okay with seeing you just to get some tips because you know what you're doing. And James, they would actually probably get some education out of it. Me, they're just going to, you know, have some entertainment for 30 minutes of watching somebody completely do horribly at that game. Dennis is now playing the game as well. So he's going to be on with us a couple of weeks from now. He'll be on the show with us. Anyway, welcome to the show. First order of business is, well, we thought about what we were going to go into, and we're going to talk about EverQuest Next. That was just announced, I believe, on Friday, was it not?
I think announcement is a fair enough term. We knew
big official reveal announcement.
We knew that it existed.
Right.
We had no idea in what form it existed. So a proper announcement, but not a proper unveiling of the game. If you have watched any of what Sony Online Entertainment, what SOE showed us from Las Vegas on Friday, and read anything about any of the individual panels, and seen some of the clips of video that they've released, you would see that it's not. It is unlike what you would usually think of when you see an announcement of a game. It isn't a carefully crafted trailer accompanied by a swell of grand music and clips of in-game gameplay. It was a reveal of the game, but from the point of view of the game systems. They started from a point of, I suppose, education about the very, very different things they were going to be trying with it. But we knew that it was going to exist. We've known for a while that it was actually going to exist. In some form or fashion, it's something that they said they've been working on for a long time. We knew it was part of their more recent, more contemporary push to kind of to reboot or reexamine and reignite some of their existing franchises, you know, having started largely with PlanetSide 2 a little over a year ago. So we knew that it was on the way. We just had absolutely no idea what to expect until yesterday, after which we have absolutely no idea what to expect.
Other than a companion title, would that be what you would call?
Oh, no, I think that's that's what that's going to be. That's, I don't know if that is as interesting as the rest of it or the more interesting or less interesting part. It goes without saying, did not play EverQuest.
Mm-mm, no, never did.
At all. I only played it a very, very, very small amount. I don't think either of you guys.
No, I didn't.
No, I haven't.
You know, that's a bit, they're in a tough spot, honestly. EverQuest is, in its own way, woven into the zeitgeist about video games, about online video games, and about online fantasy role-playing and the loss of control of the real world and the kind of slipping away into a fantasy world and just being a dramatic and incredible example of people living alternate lives online, as well as just being a seminal RPG in its own way. It is as equal in that way, I think, you could argue, as World of Warcraft is. And it's certainly much, much older. EverQuest 1 came out in 99, right? So it was among the very first games to offer what we consider to be the modern MMO. And in very literal ways, in very direct, linear ways, it is the predecessor of games like World of Warcraft. A lot of the members of the design teams and the various dungeons and encounter teams and just people who went on to work on World of Warcraft were people that were a part of the communities in EverQuest. The game has a literal direct connection to World of Warcraft, and between the two of them have pretty much created the landscape that everything else has been playing on for the last 14 years. They did release a sequel. They did have an EverQuest 2.
That
came out all of like 5 minutes before World of Warcraft, and it did everything wrong. It was completely out of step with what a game like that needed to be doing at that time. And World of Warcraft was just basically right where they needed to be. They made all the right decisions at the right time. They made the game more about art, less about tech. They made the game very accessible instead of obtuse. They made it rewarding instead of punishing. Those are broad strokes, but they took a lot of steps to move the MMO genre in a different direction. And no. EverQuest 2 failed quite badly.
Yeah, I was going to say, is EverQuest 2 where Sony Online Entertainment specifically picked up the bad reputation that they had?
No.
Or was that with Galaxies? Was that Galaxies?
That was Galaxies.
Galaxies got it? Okay.
Galaxies is really where they earned the majority of the ire that followed them for years.
Mm-hmm.
And that they are now trying to make up for in different ways. And to a degree seem to have shed.
Yeah.
I think. People are more interested now in the future of what they have to offer than in arguing about the past.
Well, there's a lot of hopeful people about, you know, EverQuest Next, or at least it got a lot of people interested. And, of course, PlanetSide 2 is another Sony Online Entertainment
yes.
MMO for them. So that's doing very well. So, yeah, they are trying to gain back some of that, not trust or something, but that I don't know, that player base, I suppose. That
they're trying to endear themselves to people
yes,
again.
Yes, they're trying to help that reputation. So. Anything stand out for you with that?
Anything stand out for you? Did you watch any of it? Did you look at it at all? Did you know what you were looking at if you did?
Right. I read up on it with the completely destructible environments,
mm-hmm.
which is what, for some reason, is the one thing that stuck out to my head of saying, I want to see what this looks like. I want to see what this does with everything being, you know, made out of voxels and whatever else, that they can be completely destroyed and then rebuilt over time, I suppose. And it sounds like they're doing the big community event type stuff. Another
they are.
Situation like
in
Defiance.
Their own way.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, everybody does it now. It's de rigueur. It's something that everyone is going to include in their games, whether they really want to or not.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure in another 5 to 10 years we'll cycle through how much people really appreciate public questing. But at the moment, it's a must. And that's been happening. I don't know that I'm aware of the first game that actually tried it, but
Rift was one of them.
No. Rift was well after the fact. I think it was one of the closer things was Warhammer.
Hmm.
The Warhammer MMO that didn't last terribly long because it was run so very poorly.
Yeah. But as far as you, what stuck out for you? Probably not.
I honestly don't know where to begin with that. I don't know exactly how to tell you. I keep waiting to find in myself like what I really, really think about that, right? I mean, look, whether you guys play it or not, you all pay attention to gaming news. You all understand what MMOs are and how they're looked at by the rest of the world. They're not impenetrable. You have to have at least some concept of what they're really trying, right? If half of what they've... And look, I am more than anyone, in this room at least, I am used to disappointment. I subject myself to disappointment all the time. I like MMOs. I enjoy playing them. I still think they are a worthy type of game. I think they're a really great thing to play. I like, you know, subscription-based stuff. I found free-to-play stuff that I like. I think that the entire spectrum of MMOs can be worthy of playing and paying attention to. And I think they can have a good effect on the industry as a whole, ultimately, eventually. I don't know that they're in that place right now. So I am accustomed to disappointment. I have seen much salesmanship I've been subjected to a lot of lies about what a lot of MMOs are going to do, what they're going to be capable of socially and in terms of game mechanics, what they're going to enable a player to do, how revolutionary they're going to be in some respect. So my enthusiasm is always tempered. What I heard yesterday, what I heard in that announcement, if half of what they've promised comes true, it may well be the most ambitious MMO anyone has ever made. They did not start from a point of view of saying, here's the basic MMO template, and we're going to put a bunch of revolutionary stuff on top of it. They just came announcement after announcement, subject after subject, with things that no one is doing because they largely consider it unmanageable or undoable. An entire MMO world, and you understand what that means, a large, explorable, open, multiplayer world with hundreds or thousands of people interacting in it, based on voxels?
Yeah.
Procedurally generated.
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming randomly seeded world to world. Fully destructible. Are you mad?
You're prepared for disappointment. Is that what you're saying?
Well, of course I'm prepared for disappointment. It's not that. I just don't have any experience. I don't have any reason to believe that that can actually be done.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine why someone would want to do it, because all of the consequences to me seem dreadful. It seems like a really great place for abuse and for griefing. It doesn't seem like a particularly great place to build an amazing multiplayer world. I believe that I'm wrong. But they want to make it a sandbox game again. They want to make it seamless. They want to make it a layered, fully destructible world. I don't have any reason to believe that that can work, other than to trust them, and I don't really trust anybody anymore in the games industry. I don't really have blind faith or belief that anything like that can happen and will happen the way that it's promised. But they didn't give me anything. They didn't offer anything comfortable, if that makes any sense. They didn't say, oh, no, this will be just like everything you're familiar with. Just about everything they had to offer in terms of explanation of what this game world would be like was unlike anything that we've experienced already. Everything was an effort to steer it away from the norm. I mean, that alone, whether it is mildly successful, a runaway success, or catastrophic, that alone, the effort to just steer away from convention in almost every way is laudable, but I don't, you know, we look, every time somebody, there's a reason when games come out, we like to look to the closest example on the market. I don't know, it's like this meets this.
Right.
You know, it's this and this had a baby.
Right.
But
it rarely ever is that.
No, but you look to something to give an explanation to other people. It's like, here are two other things from your experience. So you can say, oh, it's like this, it's this thing's version of classes and combat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I liked that, so maybe I'll like this. Or I didn't like that, so I'm less interested. In this case, there seems to be less and less for anyone to go on, for anyone to base their experience on.
You'd have to pull from like five different games to get any kind of example. Because when you're talking about the world being fully destructible and procedurally generated in a giant sandbox, you're essentially talking about something like Minecraft.
Sure.
Right.
Terraria.
That's what somebody in the chat room just mentioned. Right. Sounds like it's Minecraft MMO.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Just
in that respect,
right.
There's still so many other systems they talked about that you have to then lay on top of that and explain using some other analogy that it gets really, really complicated.
Yeah, it's a fridge, and you have to put things in it. So that was a reference to the Forza 5 analogy that we've covered twice on this show. So there's that aspect of it. There is the player created towns that Gersnort was talking about. There's just all this level of
right. They're talking about public quests, like you mentioned, but they're talking about public quests being in some respect the raid encounters or the large group encounters that you would find in another game. And these they were mentioning specific public quests or call to arms or whatever it was they were calling it. Rallying call, I think is what it was, that would last, you know, we're accustomed to these things lasting minutes. A raid in a traditional MMO would last hours. They're talking about events that will last months. Months, man. There are video games that don't last months. Like they show up and then they're dead in months. The Old Republic barely lasted months as a traditional game before it had to completely change its entire business model. And you're telling me that there are elements of your game going according to plan by clockwork that will take longer or possibly a significant, like a portion of the full lifespan of the Old Republic. That's weird, man. That's just weird. How can you possibly have any reason to believe this is going to work? Don't get me wrong. There's a part of me that's absolutely optimistic about what they're trying. They're trying stupid, amazing, wonderful stuff. I mean, there are roughly 1-2 sandbox-style games left out there in the MMO world. Now, again, they're drawing systems from a lot of things that you can find in single-player games, but they're adding them together, like Jeremy said, in a way that makes them unrelatable. You can talk about crafting and about exploration, and obviously instantly Minecraft jumps to mind, right. But it's more than just a Minecraft MMO. You have a game that's based around RPG classes, a game that's based around story and the progression of that story, a game that's based around loot systems and number systems and leveling up, but somehow without levels. I don't understand it. I'm really, really left out.
Multiple classes and combining weapons and
right,
just all sorts of stuff. There's apparently you'll start with being able
to choose everything you've ever enjoyed in games. We're going to just throw in to this MMO.
Well, it depends entirely on who you are. You can't do something like this without causing arguments. Mm-hmm. There are in many cases two belief systems about how all of these things work in MMOs. You know, there are people who like combat systems that are very traditional, very tab targeted, and hotkey. You know, skill bar type of combat. There are people who like pure action twitch level combat, you know, dodging and the kind of thing that you would use on an Xbox 360 controller, that sort of stuff. Action RPG as opposed to traditional tab targeting RPG.
Yeah.
And those groups are never ever going to really agree about what they want. To me, it looks like they're mostly trying to. To me, it looks like they're trying to satisfy the largest number of people, while blowing the minds of absolutely everybody who tunes in to see what they have to offer. And they're doing it free to play. This isn't the sort of thing you have to wonder if you're interested in.
You just go pick it up and try it out and see.
Yeah.
But like the classes, right? This is another aspect of their game they talked about where you would really have to compare this to something else outside of everything else we've talked about. That you'll start off being able to choose from 8 different basic classes, and then you go out and explore and find up to 40 other different types of classes that you can get. And then you can combine elements of those classes to somehow make your own class that does the sort of things you want to do. And the sort of things you'll do will also vary depending on what types of weapons you decide to carry. So it sounds like you're not going to ever be forced down a specific what we're used to with the trees of different skill sets. There's no predetermined skill set for you to walk down. You find the things you like to do, and you do those things.
Hmm.
Sort of a, I don't know, Mr. Potato Head of classes, right, for your character?
I guess, yeah, that's a kind of a good way to put it. Or at least what you explained, that's kind of a good way to put what you're explaining to it. How that'll actually execute when the game's released. It could be different. And we're talking, I don't know, release, we're talking.
We have no idea.
Yeah.
They are so early on. Everything that they showed was alpha or pre-alpha level of thing. It was actually somewhere hovering, to be fair, right around the tech demo level of quality. Everything looked fairly polished. The animations of the handful of characters that they showed looked extraordinarily good. The art looked refined, and mm-hmm. it looked clear, and it looked like it had a purpose, and I can understand, I think, inherently where they intend to go with the world design and the character design. I think everything looked really, really good. But as far as loot and progression, as far as numbers and combat systems and levels or what works in place of levels, things like that, they had nothing actually to show. They had none of the AI that they talked about because they're talking about using incredibly, if not advanced, incredibly peculiar AI for the purposes of an MMO. They're really talking about taking, I guess, as you said earlier, some of the best of what we like in theory from all different sorts of games and trying to put them into an MMO. To me, it's unbelievable to me. I don't mean that it's not possible. I don't think, but it's unbelievable. I don't have any experience with someone trying to do exactly this. And I think they're trying to give me the best of everything. And I feel like I've been a bit disappointed in the past when someone tries to do that.
Yeah.
I've become really comfortable with wanting specific things, trying to do a handful of things really, really well, rather than trying to fix the world. Fixing the world is really hard.
And what do we know about the part of that that comes out in the winter?
That's Landmark.
Landmark, yeah.
Yeah. That is essentially the creative... That is essentially Minecraft. I mean, I really don't like doing that, but that is the crafting and the exploration and the collecting portion of the game. It's that technology that allows you to build and explore very much like Minecraft does. You can... Just like on a Minecraft server, you can go out and, you know, stake a claim to an area, or like a modded Minecraft server. Mm-hmm. You can do that. You can stake a claim. You can provide permissions to other people, to your friends, to come and play and build with you. You can explore and find a lot of necessary components for building better and better things. And then through a certain system that they haven't really detailed, you can take some of your creations from a certain place in the game where there are very heavy restrictions on the nature of your design, and submit those to a vote, to a community vote that is overseen by the EverQuest team. And they can take specific creations and import them into the eventual full game and showcase individual people's creations as elements of the world. There are even fuller... more realized elements that will allow you to do this once the game is released and be paid for it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot about that. We're real world money for the stuff.
Sure, let's throw that in too, right?
Yeah.
Right. Let's throw a cash shop and the ability for you to earn real money.
Making virtual goods.
Right.
Well,
I don't buy it. I don't. It's too much of all the things I've wanted to see before. I'm trying not to draw too much from the actual videos we saw because they showed some combat and they showed the concept of destructibility, but they didn't go into detail. And I don't think where games like this are concerned, you should rush to any conclusions and you shouldn't infer too much. Either in support of the game or in any kind of argument against what the game is promising. You just shouldn't infer an awful lot. You wind up making terrible mistakes and building yourself up or getting really angry over stuff that we just don't know yet. But nobody's really doing what they're doing. Nobody's drawing from so many different individual influences like this right now. And I just don't buy it. I don't. I suppose step one is for them to simply give us Landmark.
Yeah.
I'm assuming that's going to be free as well. They didn't state so expressly, but SOE has said that everything that they're making now is free to play. All of the stuff that comes out of that studio is intended to be free to play. So I can assume we will all, at some point this year, this calendar year, get our hands on Landmark and start being able to decide how much we believe whatever else it is they're promising.
Well, we'll see. That's Landmark's in the winter, and then the game is, you know, whenever. They haven't really put that out there yet. So anyway, that'll wrap up the first segment of In-Game Chat. We will be right back with more of In-Game Chat coming up next. And welcome back to In-Game Chat. Multal in the chat room got it right. This is N+, which is getting a sequel at some point in the future. Don't know when, but it is getting some a sequel. I was about to say getting some DLC. Why? Because that's what we're going into now. BioShock Infinite finally got some DLC this week. Clash in the Clouds was released Tuesday or Wednesday of this week, and it's your first section of DLC that you've gotten. You're supposed to get three if you did the season pass, and this is the first that a lot of people were wondering where it was and when it was coming out, because as you go with DLC stuff, too long and the game becomes something that you forget, that you're, you know, you've either turned it back in for trade credit or whatever the case, you know, you've lost interest, that sort of thing. You've uninstalled it on your PC, something like that. But this has taken a while. That game came out, when did BioShock Infinite come out? April?
March or April.
Yeah, somewhere around in April, and here it is August, and we got DLC, the first batch of DLC, which
barely qualifies.
Right.
Technically, it's DLC.
It is.
But I cannot think of any element of BioShock Infinite that needs to be highlighted less, needs to be the star of its own DLC less than the actual combat and the combat with the enemies. The AI was average, and there have been millions of words spoken about the overall really poor quality of the combat in BioShock Infinite. Right. I had no problem with it really going through the game, but it's not a standout. It's the last thing about that game that you would find interesting. The setting, great. The story, such as it is, whatever it actually is, and we can argue more about that. We will, I'm sure, come the second and third portions of the DLC. But it's just an arena fighter or you know, wave survival. It's horde mode, whatever you want to call it. That's really all it is. And I cannot think of anything I would like to do less. The only thing about it, and I haven't read any reviews or impressions or anything about it, the only thing that I would be interested in seeing in this, theoretically, would be some of the more complex...
The map layouts
that we know for a fact were a part of the game in the about a year and a half prior to its release, after they had sort of finalized a lot of the character designs and everything, but before the game got pushed back and disappeared.
It was really when they first showed us the open world but the combat with the rails and everything else. It was the first time they ever really showed that off.
The actual gameplay stuff.
Where it was
that were just story trailers.
Right.
But the stuff that was actual gameplay had a lot of interwoven skylines. It had a lot of verticality and horizontal gameplay to it. It was fairly complex. I can understand in retrospect why they got rid of it. But if that was something that they wanted to charge me $5 to do, and I could be promised that level of thing, just cordoned off very specific little arenas that I got to fight in like that, and they were of the complexity that had originally been intended, I could get involved in that. But I didn't see any evidence that that's what they've provided. I don't like the term rush job, but that's absolutely what this looks like. This looks terribly uninteresting. They've taken a game that, look, man, wasn't that great. It was a great ride. It was a good time. It was really fun to be drawn along with its sort of nonsensical story and its very interesting characters.
But like you said, there's a lot of complaints about specifically the combat.
Right. And even those people who weren't complaining about it could probably all agree that it was the most unnecessary thing to build a pack of DLC around. So I can understand people that are upset about that, because they said, if I'm not mistaken, they said very specifically that they had not started DLC before the game shipped. They waited till the game shipped and then they got to work, which makes this first pack a little bit worse, a little bit harder to understand, a little bit harder to stomach for the people who were charged on day one for a season pass.
And then, we get into this part of the things where, I would love to, there's nobody in this room, and I don't think there's anybody, maybe Matt, but I don't think he did it either. Who bought the season pass.
Nope.
Sight unseen, by the way. So, well, not necessarily sight unseen. All season passes are pretty much sight unseen, but also
not necessarily.
Well, no, usually, for the most part, you will know here's what you're getting. We're going to be releasing some multiplayer maps or something like that. That you're going to get, you know, maybe some, you know, some single player DLC or something like that. So
I'm not sure that a lot of the people who agreed to pay money for what they were told would include story based DLC, and whether, you know, whether obviously caveat emptor applies. It always applies, but I'm pretty sure that the idea people had in mind when paying for future DLC for something like BioShock Infinite was not, for a game that doesn't have any multiplayer, was not something that was half-baked and combat-centric. I'm pretty sure that they were really thinking more towards
something story-oriented.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Or yes, something story-oriented. So there are a lot of people who are not very happy about getting that at all. So, and I don't know of anybody who didn't buy, I can't imagine someone who didn't buy into the season pass who was going to spend the $5 to revisit the worst part of BioShock Infinite.
Right.
That's amazing to me.
Yeah, it's 60 new challenges. It essentially equates to like an arena mode. As you play, you unlock as you play, you earn money that you can then spend in the museum and unlock songs and statues and things like that, character art, stuff like this,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So, and that's about right. But they also announced the two other pieces of DLC that will come with this season pass, the Burial at Sea campaign, which is a campaign in two parts, and it takes place with Booker and Elizabeth in Rapture pre-fall.
Pre-fall, on the day prior to fall, is my understanding, on New Year's Eve 1958, which is the day just before everything began to fall apart in the original BioShock. And Booker and Elizabeth seem slightly reimagined, you know. Elizabeth presented as a, I believe, if I'm looking at it correctly, they really wanted to sort of draw her out of the girlish, young ingenue kind of role and put her in a somewhat more really noirish.
Yeah, she looked different.
Young
yeah.
adult kind of thing. They dressed her up a little bit more.
What if they're changing the voice?
No, it didn't sound like it. She spoke in the trailer. Yeah.
It's like she's older, wiser, and battle-weary?
Not necessarily battle-weary, just grown. I think they're trying to present her more as someone, and I think there's a reason for this. They're trying to present her someone as self-reliant, capable, and adult, instead of relatively helpless the way she was in BioShock Infinite. You can say anything in the world you want to about how she couldn't be hurt as a character, how she had her own powers and she helped you out. She was a relatively useless and helpless character. She was just, the only reason she was in the game was to give you something to be on about as a player. And whatever, I don't want to relitigate that. But I think specifically they're changing the nature of the Elizabeth, and they're free to do this because of the many worlds version of BioShock. Because in the second part of this two-part DLC, you will play as her. So they need to infuse her with something that's going to make the player comfortable playing her later on, I guess. You know, she needs to be the kind of person that you're willing to inhabit. Not just a person with a power set that you find interesting, but someone as human and as real and as genuine in terms of a player character sense as someone like Booker is. Someone you want to be a part of, someone with their own thing, independent of being protected by another person, by another character. It'll be interesting how they manage that. I don't expect it to make any sense, but none of the rest of it did either. So, I don't know.
That's fine. Getting the opportunity to go to Rapture, particularly the day before the fall, sounds terribly fun and interesting.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, out of the DLC mentioned, that was the only one that really was. I was like, I might be in on that one. You know, I might pick up those two pieces of DLC.
I'll absolutely play those.
Yeah.
I don't think there's much question of whether or not I will play those. The question is how long we're going to have to wait to play them.
That's the other thing. The thought on this is that if they hadn't started the DLC until after the game was released, and they just got out the arena mode, which is just essentially combat, doing something like this single-player campaign, it's going to take a lot more time
yep.
than the, how many months? 3 months? or 4 months that it took them to get this out. So we'll see about that. I didn't buy the I didn't put my money in ahead of time to get the DLC. I'm curious as to how people feel about that, if they're satisfied with what they got, you know. I don't know that there's anybody in the chat room so far. I haven't stumbled across anybody that says, hey, I paid for it and I'm happy with it. But yeah, it's interesting to see how that's going to unfold, as it were.
Well, what would you rather have? What would you honestly rather have? Would you rather have something that takes all of this time where you know, where a huge window of time passes because there was, and I don't know that everybody felt like this. I don't know that everybody acted like this. But for a long time, when we started seeing DLC announced right out of the gate, we knew before the launch of the game, as a matter of fact, we knew straight ahead that there was DLC coming out right away. They were already working on it. They had a team set aside before the game shipped, or they spent that time between Gold Mastery and actual retail shipping starting work on the DLC, which can sometimes be a significant period mm-hmm. of time. There had been a general hue and cry from people who play video games that this is horrible. This is all stuff that should have been on the disc. You're just cleaving away content and putting it in a separate place. You're offering it to me as a separate download, charging me extra money just to line your own pockets, which, you know, it's a pretty bad way of describing just, you know, trying to stay in business. But there was a lot of argument against that. There was a lot of complaining and griping about that simple business practice. In retrospect, it doesn't seem too bad. I would much rather have a game that I enjoy, have some, just, it doesn't require a lot, just some trust that the developer isn't, he's not being a jerk. He's not trying to use you, right? These guys have jobs. They make video games. And there are lots of good reasons to expect that they would finish up a game and start immediately on DLC so they can strike while the iron's hot.
Well, there's also lots of different phases of development. And when you get, and this is for any software project, not just games, but when you get to a certain point in development, you want to do a feature freeze and say, no more new features. It's time to just go into bug fixing and polishing and getting it ready to ship. And at that point, you may have a significant amount of your team that is unnecessary for that part of the process. So it makes complete sense from any perspective to take those team members and say, okay, you go ahead and get to work designing the first piece of DLC that will come out after this game is released. And so it's no wonder that we see DLC announced day and date of the release.
And the complaints that you usually see following those immediate announcements, I think, are largely rooted in the inability for the average person to understand the real business, the real function, the real process of making games. There's really nothing wrong with having it immediately. And if it's DLC I'm going to be interested in, if it's something that I think I am going to enjoy, I would much rather have it 2 months after release than 9 months after release. And there are a lot of people who have purchased these things on console. They're going to be wondering now, do I have to go? Like, they've already beaten BioShock Infinite. Mm-hmm. There's no reason to hold on to it. So they've sold it to somebody else. I mean, the worst I've done is uninstall it. I played it on PC. I own it on PC. I can always reinstall it.
I was thinking of along storylines where if you do beat the game, you understand, experience the story. Now you've got DLC months after the fact. You've forgotten the story. Now you got to do a rehash of seeing everything you've done to understand fully comprehend what's going on in the DLC.
Oh, and worse than that, the controls.
Yeah.
You come back to the game again.
Relearning the controls. Yeah, I've had to go through that before.
I think if we could just generally kind of, if you could just trust that they're not trying to screw you over, that they're not trying to do something terrible, that they're working the business the way it works. They're performing their job in a way that keeps them working and keeps the content moving, because content is very difficult to deliver. It takes a long time to make. So, and I would much rather have it sooner than later. Just everything. I would rather have everything sooner than later. And I imagine by the time this shows up, I mean, I'm going to play it. All I have to do is reinstall the game and get back into it. But I would much rather have already had it. And I would much rather be playing it while it's still something that a larger number of people are concerned with.
Yeah, Lavos made a good point. Is Columbia not interesting enough that we have to go back to Rapture again?
That's an interesting question. What do you think? I know my answer.
I never played.
I wasn't thinking about Columbia at all, just Booker and what he was going through.
Yeah.
I didn't think about Columbia at all, really.
So. Well, I think a lot of people were really... I think it was a cute tie-in at the end of the game, obviously, for us to know. I mean, the announcement of this kind of ruins the fact that the two worlds are separate. In its own way, it sort of ruins the ending of BioShock Infinite. But to know that those worlds are connected to one another was really cute and fascinating, but only meaningful in a small way. To know that they're going to set the entire thing there, I don't... Again, to be fair... There's no reason that BioShock Infinite, there's no reason that Columbia can't be featured in this DLC. All we know is the 30 seconds of video that they showed that it's featured, like that, you know, Rapture is the location of this, but that there's no reason to expect that it can't be there.
That they could pull a twist and at the end of the Part 2 DLC.
Right, they wind up in Columbia.
You end up in,
There's every reason to expect that they can do anything that they want, which is one of the reasons I'm interested in it. I don't care about the rules anymore. I don't care for trying to make the endings make sense. I don't think they can be made to make honest sense. I think it's just a bunch of stuff that happened, and it's kind of fun if you let it happen.
Sort of like Doctor Who.
Yeah, just
don't think about
it
too hard. Just go along for the ride.
Just let the two of them do whatever they're going to do, and don't try to figure it out. Play it and enjoy it. I think it's maybe best. I mean, I don't mind. I can't even say that. I try to figure stuff out all the time. I think there's a certain point where you have to just let it go and not really worry about it. Having said that, I hated Columbia. I thought it was a miserable, crappy place. I really thought that it was poorly conceived. I thought that it was ridiculous in a way that Rapture wasn't. I couldn't relate to it. It was silly beyond what I'm willing to let that universe be. It just took things to such a... The presentation was lovely. It was beautiful. I enjoyed it. But of the two places, I would far rather be in Rapture.
I think you would agree with Lavos there in the chat room. You know what make good DLC is more Lutecis.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Well, sure.
And so, yeah, that's obviously something that everybody can agree on. Matt in the chat room says that, yeah, he can agree on that as well. That would be good. But, again, this is what we're getting out of the DLC. If you paid for the season pass, you're getting it. Now, if not, you can buy it, you know, a la carte as you want when it's released. No idea on the price for the Burial at Sea stuff. I don't know that they're going to be different than what the Clash in the Clouds would be.
I thought that they made some mention of price. Clash in the Clouds is just $5.
Yeah.
My understanding was that parts 1 and 2 of Burial at Sea are going to be $15 a piece.
That's what I, yeah.
And that the season pass as a whole was only $20, right?
Wow, yeah.
That you get a discount if you buy the season pass.
That's a good deal then.
It's something like that. In either case, I think you come out better whether you want Clash in the Clouds or not. You come out better buying the season pass, but yeah. I'm not going to do it. I don't know. Maybe I'll just wait as long as possible. I don't really want to reward it because I don't really like it. I don't much approve of this just because it's so very much based on a promise. If somebody could show me, you know, give me some detail, give me just an outline of what they intend to do with the money that I'm giving them for nothing. At least a pre-order is usually attached to some kind of promise, to some kind of marketing, to some example, even if it turns out to be untrue, some example of what the game actually turns out to be. Season Pass is just, and maybe not in the case of a multiplayer game. In a multiplayer game, if I think I'm going to be into the game, Battlefield 3, Battlefield 4, something like that, yeah, I'm going to want to stay in it. I'm going to want to stay on top of the maps. Mm-hmm. And usually at the outset, they're good about saying, look, I'm going to charge you this much for the Season Pass. I'm going to charge you this much for each of the map packs. So you're going to save money. You just have to decide right now whether you think it's worth the gamble that you're going to be in this game for the long haul.
Yeah.
That's a little bit different. You know, you want to stay competitive with other people. but in something like this, they need to do a better job up front of showing people what it is they're going to get for their money. They're the only people who benefit from season passes. So
yeah, and that was I'm sure we covered it on an episode about we've covered it before, having having season passes available for purchase before you even buy the game, before the game's even released. Here's a season pass for you to buy before the game's released. Here is the enhanced edition that has other stuff that we're going to add in later for, 6 months down the line that you'll pick up for free or whatever the case. Or you can get it in a Steam sale, which was nice during the summer sale to pick up some DLC.
Maybe publishers should just start selling a publisher season pass.
That's a good idea.
the EA season pass.
Oh, geez.
Whole bunch of stuff. We're not going to tell you what. We're going to make a bunch of stuff, and maybe you'll get this.
$500.
An EA subscription. Right? Not to any particular title, not to any particular game.
For everything that we put out this year.
Not everything. Don't make any promises. Just charge a bunch of money. We're going to make some stuff. It'll show up in your season pass channel. Some of it you have to pay for. Some of it will be season pass stuff. So just a subscription to EA. How about that?
That would work for some people.
I'm sure it would actually work pretty well.
Yeah. You just planted a seed, probably. Who knows?
There's no way. There are people who are employed to think evil thoughts like that.
And they haven't come up with it yet?
24 hours a day. They've come up with it. That's sitting in a vault somewhere. It's in a warehouse in a wooden crate.
Gersnort says, wouldn't it be a better model to say, buy the season pass and pick which three of the 12 things you want?
Oh, that would be horrible. Because there'd be like four things I want.
Ultimately, yeah.
Yeah. It would be horrible for me. It wouldn't be horrible for them.
And then you could pay.
Because then I just have to pay full price for that fourth thing.
You pay extra for more choices.
Right.
So that's how they monetize it or something like that. Who knows? Anyway, we got to take a break. When we come back, what do we got? We got emails to talk about. We've got our times with I wrapped up Witcher. You guys still playing Dark Souls? Jeremy's here. Don't know what he's been playing, but we'll find out.
Still playing Witcher.
Still playing Witcher as well? Oh, okay, good. Yeah, we'll jump into that then. All right, when we come back, more in-game chat coming up. And welcome back to In-Game Chat for the second hour. This is Aegeus Wing from Xbox Live Arcade. We had a lot of fun with. Welcome back to the show. Going to dip into some emails here and go over some we got throughout the week. Daniel Phelps writes in with some thoughts on Team Fortress 2. He knows that most of us on the show don't play Team Fortress 2. And doubts any of us can ignore, but doubts that any of us can ignore the notion that this game has had such an impact on the most popular PC game platform and distribution model. The inventory system that we have now in Steam was because of TF2, as is the gifting, the trading, the marketplace. It all came about from things that were done in and with Team Fortress 2. And about a day or so after he sent that in to us, he wrote in again after having looked over some of the other aspects of what Steam has to offer. And he says he played around a bit with the Steam community and was blown away with all that it offers. The game hubs and the discussions on specific games, along with the guides that are written by players and even uploads of fan art. He has never owned an Xbox, so he doesn't know what Live has to offer in the way of a community. After all is said and done, he feels it's sort of fascinating to think about where Valve are ultimately going with all of this, and reminds us that Steam's original purpose was to be DRM for Half-Life 2, essentially. Now, it's essentially the major hub for PC gaming, and it makes him wonder if all of these features are not part of some bigger goal. Do we think that it is? Do you think that Steam has bigger goals as far as you know, what they're doing with Steam itself. I know we know about...
No, they're kind of done.
Steambox, yeah.
They're actually done. This fall, they're announcing that Steam is done. It's not going to do any more stuff at all.
Well, just to correct one misconception in that email, its original purpose wasn't actually DRM for Half-Life 2. Its original purpose was to get around their publisher, Vivendi. Who had put no money into Half-Life 2, who had put no money into anything they had made, but had taken an awful lot. It was launched.
That trend pretty much changed, though, right? They stopped doing that.
Right? Oh, yeah. Oh, after they're like, oh, yeah, we'll be good guys now, and we'll all get along. No, they were sued for Steam and selling their game on Steam, and they lost
every
that.
Penny.
Yeah.
Worth every penny of that suit.
Yeah. But, the original intent was to get around a publisher, and that's essentially what it's done ever since, is it not just allowed them to get around their publisher, but a lot of smaller guys as well, to get around traditional publishing avenues. A lot of what it's continued to do to this day has been built off of that. So I guess in my opinion, I'd say it's continued to do what it originally set out to do, just bigger and better as time has gone on.
I don't think it's gone in quite the direction that it was originally intended. I think that it's developed a little more organically than they had in mind. But I don't think where we are now is exactly the direction they thought they would be looking. I know the things they wanted to provide, but I think they had something a little bit different in mind, which I think is wonderful because doubtless they've evolved a lot based on what they've seen in the market. They've made major decisions about the direction of Steam based on what they've seen happening in the wider market, rather than just forging a specific path and saying that, you know, come hell or high water, we're going to do this thing. We are going to develop in this direction. I think that would have killed them, actually. I think it's killed a lot of other things. I think you see people trying to do something like, I think Origin is a very good example of trying to gather up all of your will, all of your power and your money and your influence, and drill through a mountain. Say that this is what I'm going to do, and I don't care what happens. I don't care what I see in my periphery. I don't care what's in front of me. I'm going to destroy it and plow right through it and create the thing I want to create. I think Steam has been very fluid. I think that they had a concept, some fuzzy-headed, very mathematical, very loosely defined concept of what they wanted to do. So, I mean, by no means are they... I don't see Steam as... I believe that they're just a continuum of change, like so many other things. I don't think they are in any place. And I don't, you know, the older I get, the less I view the industry, the games world, as that thing. I don't view it as this is the goal, this is the end result of everything we've done. There's so much change and so much churn, so much turnover, so much development, and so much money, and so much chasing after other money. The whole thing to me is a boiling, moving, it's not a mess, but it's just, I don't ever look at it and think that for a moment, and I think this is me more than anything, but I don't ever look at it and think that this is where we are. I always feel like I'm on the way to the next thing. I always feel that it is just, not even just a step, but it is a constant spectrum of change. And it is everything's just smeared out over a huge expanse of time. And there aren't clear markers anymore like there used to be. There aren't strict turning points like there used to be. Everything feels like it's just on the way to being something else all the time, under all circumstances.
Yeah.
I don't ever feel like we're going to know that we've gotten there, wherever there is. There isn't anywhere to get. There is just the next thing. There is the next evolution. There's the next set of changes. And it happens one game at a time, one studio at a time. But even the generations don't make sense anymore. Nobody can even agree which generation this is or which consoles on the market currently are a part of which generation. There's too much argument about it. It used to be very simple. And it's not so simple anymore. because it's not about hardware, just hardware. It's about, you know, it's about services. It's not just about shipping a disc. It's about downloads and DLC. And even that's old. Now it's about, you know, those same things, but being defined as the cloud. It's about community and interconnectedness. But if you want to look at something like EverQuest Next, it's about crowdsourcing the actual content in your game. Everything is about so... There isn't a stopping point. There is no more off-ramp. There are no more demarcation lines, mm-hmm. you know, for... We've reached this point in our development as an industry, and now we're looking forward to this threshold. I don't feel that way anymore. I'll know when I feel like I'm in a newer place, in a more advanced place, a more developed place. I'll know when game worlds start to feel a new way. And you'll certainly know the first time you see a new system in place. I don't want to make out like you'll never be able to mark progress, but it doesn't work quite the same. Or maybe I don't see it quite the same. But I don't know. That's all to say it's a lot more interesting to me now than it used to be.
Yeah, I know they're pretty much well-loved now, but I know they were pretty much well-hated early on.
Everything is.
Yeah.
It didn't do anything but be broken early on because it didn't offer anything. They were a gatekeeper to their content, and people were really hungry for the idea of what little they offered socially, the friends lists and the communication stuff that they had. And it was sort of a wretched, strange thing that really resembled X-Fire in a lot of ways. Like, the two programs actually seemed a lot alike early on.
Good point, yeah.
I mean, they did visually.
Oh, no, yeah.
And the layout was the same, and it hadn't evolved in any particular direction. And the whole concept of, like, a store? You want a store in my friends list? What, are you insane? This is ridiculous. No way. Never. It'll never work. But I don't know. They're less about... They're really... I don't know how many more... I don't know how many more things they can do that we've never seen before, you know? And I haven't seen too much evidence of them trying to do major things we haven't seen before. They're very evolutionary now. They're very... they're not conservative, but they're very careful and they're very measured in the actions that they take. They're certainly the most interesting people doing what they're doing right now.
Right. No. Yeah, definitely. I mean... one of the things he didn't bring up was Steam Greenlight as well, with how they're doing that also. And that's a situation that they've caught some flack over, and then they probably caught flack over a couple other things. But it's more well known that they're catching some I don't know about bad press, but there's a lot of people that look at it with a leery eye to say that I don't necessarily know I like how that works, and. Something that we found out, I think, about a week ago was that the guys at Steam are aware of the issues and are aware of people's concerns with it. And they're just, they understand it. It's like, yes, we know. We know that this is your problem with it. We know it's a popularity contest. We know that it's one of these situations. We're trying to fix that. And we'll get there, you know. So we'll evolve that aspect of it. But
is green light with problems better than no green light?
Right.
Is it?
It's a great question to ask.
Well, it's an honest question. Don't know. I'm not too heavily invested in their program, but what else is doing that? Certainly nothing else is.
Microsoft has no program like that.
No.
Sony has no program like that. Certainly EA and Ubisoft don't have a program like that.
Well, Activision. And isn't it objectively better than the scenario you had to go through previously to get your game on
mm-hmm.
Steam?
Yeah.
Didn't they admit that was internally fundamentally broken, and this was an effort to not only engage the community in one of their kind of creepy community engagement developments, I mean, which are kind of weird, the gamification of being a gamer,
right? Yeah,
but to enhance that process, to find a better way of making this happen. Isn't this better than what it replaced? And if that's the case,
it's only one of the most direct, straightforward, easy ways for an independent developer to get major attention and get published in a major way. But it's broken.
Right. I mean, criticism is good.
Yes.
Criticism is certainly good and healthy, and I'm certainly not saying that we shouldn't be criticizing. I don't know enough about the way that portion of the industry works to criticize it well. I really don't. Beyond agreeing that, yes, it's a popularity contest. People I like, people I follow, have retweeted a link to this guy's game, and if I trust him and his judgment says that this is probably a good game, then I'll follow it to the green light link and I'll go click on it, and there we go. Yes, I understand how that works, and popularity breeds success. That's actually how Steam works in general, or success breeds more success. But I don't know that that's wrong exactly. Again, I don't know enough to say that it is, but it does seem to me like it's better than what they were doing. And if anything, Steam has shown that they are always on the way to trying to do a better version of what they're doing now. It may take a minute, so give it a minute.
Yeah, well, on the subject of Steam, another email we got was from Alex. He writes to us for the first time after being a longtime listener, and gives us a bit of a personal history for him. For starters, he used to pirate everything on the PC. He'd get it all there, his games, everything else. And then he found Steam. And it wasn't Steam's cheap prices that led him away from pirating games on the PC, but it was the auto patching that he enjoyed. The prices were great, and the other values that Valve has added to Steam have only solidified his decision that he made. He doesn't think he's alone in this. He feels that most ex-pirates have switched not only because of the cheap prices, but also the fact that the quality of PC games have very much increased since the time between 2002 and 2006, where just about all PC games were, at least arguably, horrible console ports. Irrespective of that reason, Alex feels there's enough value in the said games and services that many have lowered their black flags, understanding easily that, you know, it still happens. You can still easily pirate games. You're still going to find them all over the internet for you. But he doesn't feel that he agrees with the notion that piracy is such a problem now that it hampers PC game sales, except in cases where people feel like the product isn't worth any amount of their money, in which case it's more a justified act of spite than just wanting something free. He wants to know how we feel about modern-day piracy. You could make the case that they're actually important to gaming as a whole, but you can't ignore the impact that they've had, directly or otherwise. At the same time, though, he's pretty sure Steam specifically, not any other digital download service, has single-handedly nullified a huge chunk of that demographic.
It's certainly taken away a lot of the... Look, if you want to pirate a game, mm-hmm. you have to go find a place to download it, get a crack for it, assuming it doesn't come with a crack. And if there's patches, you got to get patched up. You got to get the patches cracked. If there's DLC, you install the DLC. You got to get that re-cracked. And it's just this huge, giant mess of managing lots and lots of different versions and files. And no one wants to deal with that. And with Steam, you install your game and you're done. It's absolutely worth it. And at the prices they do stuff for on Steam sales, anybody who stays away from buying a game because of the higher prices, it's going to lure them in and say, hey, you know, just delete that pirated copy you've got. Come over here, buy this for $6, $10, $15, and we'll just manage all your stuff for you. It's super attractive.
Yeah,
I'm sure he's right that it has eliminated an awful lot of piracy.
Gersnort and 2O in the chat room both say it takes more work now to crack and pirate games.
It's tons
than
of work.
Ever has. And the convenience and the quality are the biggest factors.
And it takes less time and work to own one legitimately.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, you can look, this is really silly. You can accidentally buy games. Right?
Yeah.
That's entirely possible. I mean, mostly you've
been
talking
about
like
I've done it a few times right. To your benefit.
Yeah. You can accidentally buy a game. You can certainly access, I mean, you know, with the advent of in-app purchases and stuff like that, that's a little bit different. But we are talking a couple of clicks on a thing, a couple of taps on a screen, you can buy a game. It is, you can accidentally have a game anymore. I urge everyone who's old enough or has been doing this long enough to remember that it was not like this. Not 20 years ago, not even 10 years ago. But like six, it was difficult. I mean, the Steam store hadn't even really become a thing. Most PC gamers were still buying games on discs and managing the installs by hand, which wasn't, again, I'm not saying it's hard. It was just a lot of It was a lot of maintenance if you had a big library. It was an awful lot of things you had to deal with yourself. There was – things didn't patch themselves, man.
Mm-hmm.
6, 7, 8 years ago, nothing patched itself. You had to go find the patch and execute it yourself. And they didn't all work the same way. Not, again, tragic or horrifying. But if you're talking about a group of people, a lot of people, everybody who's got to be playing the same thing together, or people who want to be playing the most up-to-date version, nobody ever was. A lot of people weren't. You had to do all of that manually.
I specifically remember instances where we'd want to go play a 2-3-year-old game and would have trouble finding the latest mm-hmm. patch.
Yep.
It wouldn't be on the developer's website.
No, they felt no need to host their own patches. Mm-hmm. And whatever your favorite third-party patch hosting site was, maybe they had the most up-to-date version, maybe they didn't. Maybe you had to actually hack some German patch to make it work with your client or something. It was ridiculous. It was a lot of maintenance. It was a lot of hands-on time just to get things to work correctly. And that's before DRM bloomed in the way that it has and made things really, really difficult. That's just back when it was working as intended. And it was crap, you know? No, it's very, very, very nice to be able to right-click on something and install it and then just, you know, wait an hour.
Yeah.
And then it's there for you. To be able to buy something by accident, it's that easy.
Well, regarding piracy, I'll also say that I've noticed that in the PC space, it's become increasingly rare for a game to be made available through pirate channels day and date with release, whereas the console games typically are if they're not available before. And for people who want to play the game day of release, that's another thing pushing them towards a purchase.
Yeah, I can do it now or I can wait.
Mm-hmm.
Situation. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever pirated a game myself.
Yeah.
I'd heard about it. I knew plenty of people who had, but it just seemed like that's a little risky to do for viruses and things like that. And it's also...
It's also extremely risky to do now with Steam, because if you pirate a game that uses Steam Guard as its protection and you run a cracked version alongside your Steam client, your Steam client can detect it. And it might warn you a few times, but you do potentially risk losing your Steam account over that.
It wasn't pirating, but at most I ever got into doing anything like that
mm-hmm.
was downloading whatever it was so that I didn't have to have the disc in the drive to play it.
That was really common.
Yeah.
That was extremely common back in the day.
No CD cracks. All of us used.
Yeah.
You know, just because we didn't want to have to carry around our discs with us, keep them in the drive while we played.
I will say, I don't want to say there is a way to legitimize piracy. I mean, by definition, it can't be necessarily legitimized. But in all fairness, there is still an awful lot of retail garbage hanging around the neck of PC gaming. There are a lot of ridiculous things that aren't coming out in every region where they should. The release dates are sometimes really, really strange. There are no oceans in the digital future. There's absolutely no reason why certain things can't be coming out in other places. Just to have a market without borders for PC gaming would go even further to doing this. But a lot of people have to pirate stuff just to be able to get to play the game they want to play.
Because they live in the wrong part of the world.
Right.
Yeah.
That's almost never a problem for Americans. So the fact that service has far outstripped the need to pirate is largely a Western concern. There are still people in other regions, and there are cost issues. There are certain regions in the world that suffer under really, really terrible cost inflation, price inflation for their games for a lot of ridiculous reasons.
Yeah.
So there are still a lot of reasons, but yes, it's mostly a service issue. You can never extinguish it completely, but you can make it worth less than ownership.
Yeah, Australia is a great example. I mentioned in the chat room. It's a good example for the price stuff. Anyway, thanks, Alex, for the email. Final email comes from Kenneth. He wants to talk to us about Capcom. Breath of Fire 6 was announced this week and revealed it would be available for PCs, tablets, and smartphones. He isn't too worried that it's coming out on PCs, since that platform has seen plenty of good Eastern RPGs. Examples that he gave were MapleStory, Ragnarok Online, and Dungeon Fighter Online. His fear, however, is that Breath of Fire 6 may end up as a free-to-play RPG that doesn't have an ending. Kenneth says he doesn't want to play a game for the sake of playing an old IP. He likes to be rewarded with a true ending in a game for all the time and effort that he's put into it. He's afraid Capcom may be looking towards a new business model rather than making good games. Should he be worried about this announcement, or is he just paranoid? He's also curious if there are numbers that would support in the future that a free-to-play Eastern RPG is a better business choice than Eastern RPGs that have a true ending. I have no idea on that situation. I know that Capcom, I want to say it was also for Breath of Fire 6. I'm not sure. Somebody asked them if they had any plans to release it on the Vita, and the response was that they kind of giggled about that, in a sense that they had no, yeah, they weren't going to be doing anything for the Vita for that. And it kind of upset a little, you know, a good group of people who were kind of looking forward to that, or kind of looking forward to whatever they were going to be doing for the Vita, but they didn't seem to want to give it any support in that regard. So, but I don't know. I think it's a valid concern to have when things start showing up on tablets and smartphones and also on PCs, in a sense that this may be going in kind of a casual route or in a free-to-play manner. It's a possibility. I looked at some of the icons that I have on my desktop from games that I've downloaded on Steam recently, and they have a very...
You have icons on your desktop?
Yes, I do. That's... What? Go ahead. What? I have icons on my desktop. I like it. It's a nice little, like...
Did you put them there?
Well, I mean, yeah.
You put them on your desktop?
The shortcuts, yes.
Jesus. That's hideous.
Anyway, I've noticed them looking very app oriented. They just have this. They have the design of that graphic is like something I would see on my iPhone,
like your iPhone?
Or an iPad. Yeah, yeah.
What is that difference?
I don't know. I'm just saying. I just noticed it.
Well, I mean, from someone who likes icons on their desktop. I'm just asking you. Like,
it's just something that stood out among the other stuff, you know?
Okay.
It was one of those things. They have this design that looks like that. You have other games that don't have any conformity, but these have a very specific. Final Fantasy 14 is one of them, and Marvel Heroes, I think, or whatever it is, another free-to-play MMO thing, has that design as well. That's to say nothing. It's not like it's going to actually do anything with those. I just thought it was kind of interesting to see. But is he paranoid? Probably. I wouldn't get too worried.
Of course you're paranoid. That doesn't mean you're wrong.
Yeah.
It just means that you've got some sort of...
But if you've got icons, boy, you are wrong.
Well, yeah, thank you, Scott. I can't get my head around a free-to-play traditional single-player RPG. I don't want that. I'm coping with the concept of free-to-play MMOs because I understand monetizing that. I don't really like the idea of monetizing a single-player game. Like, we already do a DLC. I get it. I know. I understand. But to just have something that doesn't have an end, something that you're accustomed to having an end that you're driving toward, that's your goal. That's your objective, and that's your reward, is the ending, is the completion of that thing. Not just playing in perpetuity, which is the reward from a multiplayer game. No, that would be pretty bad. That would be really dreadful. And I don't like the casual mockery or at least the dismissal of traditional platforms for something like that, because I have to believe that their fan base has been accustomed to playing that game for the longest time on traditional type consoles or handhelds, you know? And then having to switch into the mobile space, which has its own constraints, and it has its own set of rules. I wouldn't be happy about that. A mobile version of a game that's otherwise right at home on the traditional consoles? Absolutely. Fine. You go right ahead. There's plenty of examples of that on the app stores for the mobile platforms. I mean, really good examples of those things that are either ports of stuff that's already on a handheld or on a regular console, or strict mobile versions of them that have done quite well. But moving to that environment entirely and just abandoning those other platforms, abandoning the people that don't want to play in a mobile space with a mobile interface. That absolutely rubbed me the wrong way.
I'm sure it'll be fine. I'm sure it'll turn out at least as good as Final Fantasy All the Bravest.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go home and...
for those that don't know, was a hideous, hideous, terrible piece of trash that Square put out on the Android and iOS devices. Had to buy all your extra characters to go through the game.
I haven't heard that.
But it still made money, too.
I've heard that from more than just you.
Yeah.
I've heard that from, plenty of fans of that series to see something like that. Yeah. Heard a lot of that. So, anyway, I'm going to go home and rid myself of the guilt of having icons on my desktop. And
you can't ever rid yourself of the guilt.
You're going to have to live with that.
Yeah. Wow, this is old and familiar. Go ahead, yeah.
Sims?
No, man. No.
I know I should know this. This is familiar.
It's Uno.
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know this.
Yeah, this is Uno. Anyway, we'll be back with the last segment of In-Game Chat coming up in just a bit. Back to In-Game Chat, music from GTA 4. Hey, guys in the chat room are on their game today with the music guesses. Welcome back to the show. Final segment of the show, going to talk about the games we've been playing. Jeremy is currently playing Witcher.
That's right.
And how far in? Where are you at now?
I'm almost exactly halfway through.
So you're in...
about midway through Chapter 3.
I was going to say, you're going to be in Chapter 3 somewhere. I just don't know how far in. What's your... since I've gone through it already, what is your current... like, what are you currently doing?
I killed a bunch of the salamander guys, and I currently have no active quests, so I got to go figure out what to do next.
Okay.
Yeah, I took care of the kid, like, found him a made my decision about where he was going to stay, got sent out to go fight the salamander guys.
What was your decision? Who'd you stick with on that?
I went with Triss.
I did too.
I didn't want to, but I did.
Yeah. Any reason why?
I didn't particularly like her that much.
So why'd you stick with her then?
I know that they consider the other character to be not particularly important.
Mm-hmm. See, I ran into the same situation. In the very first chapter, I was having the worst time trying to fight the beast. It was just the worst. Or was it the beast, or was it the... I can't remember. I looked up a playthrough thing. I was like, what do I need to do here to make this happen? And overheard in the commentary of this guy trying to go through it and talking about what he did, he mentioned... you know, Shani not
really being in the second game, right?
Mm-hmm. Not being very important to the story and that sort of stuff. So I was like, you know, that's when my attention diverted from her and stuck with, you know, anybody else. That if I had the choice, I didn't choose her, and that was the case. So I went the same way. I went with Triss on that. So anyway, I finished it up this weekend, and actually was very close to just going ahead and downloading Witcher 2 and then jumping in there, but I stopped and I downloaded Witcher 2 and Dark Souls, so they're both on there. I kind of want to jump into Dark Souls since everybody else is doing it. I got time now. It's amazing to have. I had two games in the way of Witcher 3. Now I only have one, and that feels really good to have. It did feel like a weight of like, oh God, I got to get through this, and then I got to get through another one of these.
Mm-hmm.
Before I can be set to go into 3, but no, I'm...
Did you like it?
Yeah.
You beat the game. Did you like it?
I liked it.
Okay.
I did. I liked it. I was surprised that I liked it, too. I mean, I was surprised when I liked it playing the first, you know, that first section when I got into it. And I was when the rhythm started hitting and this was really fun to go through and do what I was doing, I was really surprised that I liked it. Again, the setting of that game, the genre, everything else is not my style. It's not my type. But it worked on me. It worked. And I don't know how. It worked on me. Now, we talked about it, but I wore myself out with taking on too many quests. And mm-hmm. that really kind of got to me. But it didn't get to me enough where I said, you know, I don't like it anymore. I'll just look up what all the stuff is and then go from there. No, I was really happy with how it worked out. And I got more choices of that felt like I was making big decision type stuff and not just gathering apples and things like that. I actually got some choice, especially when talking to the kid mm-hmm. and working with him. And because it'll always tell you if you make one of those things, it's like, oh, now you feel this way about yourself, or Alvin the kid feels now understands that this has to be done, or something like that. It's directly related. And so I'm hoping that all that's going to come into play in two. And I think I remember people saying that, yeah, your decisions really did actually affect in the second game. I think I remember people saying that, but I'm really looking forward to it. So I liked it. I really, really, really enjoyed it. And I'm looking forward to the second one and as well as the third. God, really looking forward to the third. So you're enjoying it as well?
Sometimes I am, sometimes not very much. My feelings towards the game seem to kind of roller coaster along as I play.
What, any particular thing that you know, is it an example of like some of the things you don't like, some of the things you do?
It's hard to kind of pin down right now, but I at the moment where I have no active quests, I've apparently, unless I want to go look stuff up, I've just got to go talk and start accepting quests from people to figure out exactly what I need to do next. And I really don't want to do a bunch of side quest stuff. I really just want to get finished with it. So that's not particularly appealing to me right now. I'm not a huge fan of the combat either. I mean, it's simple enough and pretty straightforward, but I get kind of bored with it.
Are you on normal or easy?
Easy.
Okay, same thing. Mm-hmm. I did easy as well. So, anyway, yeah, that was good. Dark Souls. You played any more of that?
Yeah, I've playing through on Steam. I've gotten to the point where I'm in the depths now. There was a section I was wanting to talk to you about. How far have you gotten in your spit?
All right, look. All right. It's like there was the part and there was a bird.
Right.
And the bird grabbed me and the bird take me to another place altogether.
Right.
Okay. So what I did was I go back to that, okay? I started my dude over just because I wanted to. Don't worry about it. Reasons. I started my dude over. I got right back to there with the bird. He put me on the whatever the guy. What's the place called? The first
Lordran.
Place. Lord, sure. Where that? I don't know. I can't remember
shrine.
The names.
That's fine.
Wait, right, does anybody have? Am I the only one alone here? Like, there's a name of a place or a guy in this game, and I'm like, oh, okay. I have now entered this place, and it instantly slips right out of my mind. I don't know. Like I'm in the Dark Souls-y place, and I am completely lost and out of my depth. So. But I'm fine, kind of remade the same dude. I'm a warrior guy, but I took the key this time.
Mm-hmm.
I think that was my only difference. And it's so, like, my first hour was so much worse. It was so much worse because I was like, I got this. I know what I'm doing. I got this. No, I don't. I absolutely don't got this.
Famous last thoughts.
Yeah,
last words,
right?
On that one. Sorry.
Because I did so much better my first time around.
Mm-hmm.
Because
amazing.
I was so scared. I was like peeking out from behind my
cautious.
Shield and like, you know, slicing the pie around every single corner and like looking for stuff. And I just would like, kind of like ding, 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 like poke at things with my sword and run away really quick. And then now I'm just like, ha ha. Oh. Man, so I have to, so whatever, for that first hour when I was in familiar territory, I had to do that. And I did a lot more looking around. I was convinced. See, you should have told me that I was – it's okay to tell me that I'm stupid. You look at me like I'm stupid half the time, so it's okay to tell me. There was the plate where you go down to the graveyard from the very first fire, right?
Yeah, but we
said – the bonfire.
Yeah, we said that was the wrong way.
That was really bad, and right. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. I did it again anyway, but whatever. And it didn't work, and I just wanted to make sure that it was still the same. Yeah, okay, you're still horrifyingly difficult down there. And so I was like, okay, I know how to go up that way. And I went up, and I got some souls, and I was like, I got enough souls to, like, do a thing. So I'm going to go level up. And I was walking down, and then I noticed a place I hadn't noticed before. And as a brief aside, the density of this game, and I mean the absolute density is overwhelming. The fact that there are so many pathways, so many different directions, doubling back on itself and twisting around inside of itself, and there's elevators and stairs and pathways and things that lead in so many different directions. It really does, the environment, remind of Ico.
I thought you were going to say that.
And the
castle. I think he's going to say it.
The way that it is so intricately and purposefully designed, there's no vagary. There's nothing generic about it. It is so just crafted is the word that it screams at me. But anyway, so I noticed a thing and I was like, wait a minute, that thing's right next to the fire. I'm like, so how do we get there? So I went down and I saw like a little spiraling stairway that went down a way that I just missed before.
Mm-hmm.
And that led to an elevator.
Right.
And I went down that elevator and there was some stuff and I killed it. And then here's how it goes. I'm down in a very dark place. It's very dark, which I assumed is bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I wind up like kind of killing some easy stuff, you know, and I found like a sword on a guy. And then I go to a bridge that looks very scary. And there's a little thing on the ground where you can click and read a message that someone has left. And it's like, all it says is good luck. And
I was like, this is a player has left.
Yes. Yeah. And it just says good luck. So I was like, nope. So I turned around and went another way. And I found a locked door in the general vicinity of all that.
Okay.
A gate. And I opened that with my special, you brought this key with you from character creation. Uh-huh. You're making a face. So I went out that way and walked along a cliff and then across a cliff and then there was a cave and then it was very scary in there too. And there was a thing on the floor and I clicked on it and it said good luck. So I went the other way.
Just for the record, you went from bad to worse on that one.
And from worse, I went along the other side of the cliff and I found a proper nice long bridge over a thing and I saw a thing way in the distance along the cliff and I was like, that's a neat looking thing. That looks like a dead dragon. So I went to see it. And I don't know where my good luck hero was because he didn't leave me a good luck on the ground to tell me to go the other direction. So I went over there and there's like some the little glowing icons on the ground that you tell you can loot a thing. So I was like, I'm going to go loot that thing. And as soon as I did, I died.
Mm-hmm.
Because the dragon, he noticed me and I died. Like there was no opportunity to not die.
Right.
I just died instantly. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not coming back here for those souls to pick up that. I'm not going to go recover that dead thing. I'm just going to write that off as a learning experience.
And pay more attention to the messages that I'm picking
up. So I go, again, I go up, mm-hmm. right? And I continue up for some time, like for a while. I go up the stairs, and there was another thing that said good luck, and I was like, literally, I am out of other ways to go. And every time I come across these, I feel like somebody's messing with me. I feel like they're trying to scare me. And I am out of options.
Right.
So I can either go back to the bonfire and just sit there and the game's over. I can't go any further. So I continued up past, there's that little section where you go through the aqueduct mm-hmm. thing. And then you go up in the like dead town or something like that. I want to say it was the
Undead Burg.
Undead Burg. Sure. Dead town. Whatever. And so I'm up there and I'm in that place and I've been doing things that I took half an hour and tried to jump across this one gap that I apparently just can't jump across.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what my problem is, but I can't do it. Took all my clothes off. Still too heavy. Still can't jump. Thought maybe that was a thing. Look,
no,
I'm taking...
you're laughing, but that's a viable
option.
I'm
taking everybody at their word. They say, don't read wikis. They say, don't ask for help. Don't cheat. Don't watch YouTube videos. Just explore, man. Just let the game be at its absolute best by just being a miserable failure at it. And so that's what I did. And I am very glad that this was not a thing I was streaming. Or maybe not glad, because I think... I look so stupid. And I don't know if I can make that jump. I never did. Somebody made it because it was writing on the floor over there. Probably said good luck. Anyway, so I went the other way. And then I made friends with these guys that have spears.
Mm-hmm.
That was hard, making friends with them.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't. They hurt really bad. Why did everything hurt so bad?
Was your shield up at the time?
Yes, but they hit me like four times, and then I ran out of the, what is it?
Stamina?
Stamina that lets you have your shield up, and then I was done.
Let me guess, you may have made a mistake of holding the shield up and kept.
Well, because I'm scared, man.
Well, that.
It all
that
the time.
That hurt your stamina.
Yeah, I...
You're going to learn this as you go through, yeah.
Well, I haven't learned it yet.
Well, keep plugging away.
Because I found this sword down at the bottom in the place where it was really dark.
Right.
That's like a long, thin, like, pokey sword, and when you attack with it, well, that's what it does, man. It only stabs.
I'm half laughing at what Gersnort wrote in the chat room. He's like, as though you left a note near the fall and said, thought I could make the jump by going nude. Didn't work. Naked and coughing up blood in the gorge flow.
That, yeah.
And then, of course, your pointy sword thing.
Right. But it's where you, when you attack, you don't swing. It just.
May have been a rapier or a falchion. Yeah, rapier.
It was.
Yeah.
I don't think it was a.
Fencing sword look like?
No. It's like a long, skinny. It looks like a Witcher sword or something. It's like a long, long, skinny sword. But it's whatever. Don't worry about it.
No.
I picked it up because I was in a lot of little skinny places, and I was like, this only stabs forward, so I'm not like banging on the sides of the walls and stuff, which is what happens when you swing your longsword.
Right.
It doesn't do as much damage, but you know I can just like stab it away at a normal kind of dude, and it's no problem. Mm. That sword, no effect on the guys with the spears. They just don't care.
Well, they have those big metal shields.
Yeah,
in front
they
of
do.
Them,
they so, really yeah. do. So I left them. They were over on the side. Mm-hmm. I left them.
Okay.
I died to them like three times. Ran all the way back from the thing. Then I realized about 5 feet over there is another bonfire. So still not smart. Still not learning.
Well, like I said, keep exploring. You'll find all this stuff on your
own.
But that's the deal.
Yeah, and so. I'm making my way through, like, that place. Killed a bunch more guys, rooted around in some stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Went up, guy kicked a barrel at me. It was on fire. It hurt real bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I'm going to go down here. I'm going to look down there. It was a really big guy. That's always the case, apparently. There's always a really big guy. And he had his back to me, and I was like, I can get him. I couldn't get him.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't get him.
Well, you could hurt him, but it's always at the level you're at now, starting fresh, it's going to be a real battle.
Here's my thing. I have been, through no fault of my own, trained, like everybody else, to understand the game is going to tell me where to go. Mm-hmm. Right? There's going to be some kind of very clear design, because I'm stupid, that it's just going to tell me where to go. It's going to be clear. Don't worry. It's not direct hand-holding. But we're going to beckon you along this path. We're going to either force you or entice you along a certain path.
It's been at least 15 years since I actually had to think for myself
right.
in the game, right?
And
about where do I go next?
Exactly. And you know that great joke, right, that in any game, you think you're going this way and you're going down a corridor and you come up to a bulkhead or a doorway and you're like, but there was a hallway back there. I better go check that hallway. There might be some ammo or something down there. And it's the sort of back and forth of which way do you go to the checkpoint? It's just, there are just directions in this game. It's not open world by any stretch of the imagination, but it is Don't get me wrong. I'm literally not complaining about this, but it is my need to see everything. My nerves are jangling when I play this game because I need to go down there. There is an impossibly difficult guy barring my way, and that's all that's stopping me. It's not like an impassable doorway that I just have to find the key for, which soothes my psychological need to explore. I know I can come back and do that. It's just, whenever you can beat this guy, you can go in there. Mm. And it's an impressive sensation. And it is, I understand now why the appeal of this game simply cannot, under any circumstances, be expressed through screenshots or video or anything other than experience, because that is where it is different. Not even necessarily in the quality of its RPG mechanics. I'm certainly not far enough along to say one way or the other, but in that it just doesn't care what other games have been doing for so long. Mm-hmm. It does not. It's not even the difficulty so much. I mean, a lot of the early encounters simply aren't difficult at all, and It's not the fear. It's not any kind of impossible, demanding sequence of events. It's just, I honestly feel like I'm battling my own past, my own experiences, my own concrete understanding of what a game should be when I'm playing this game.
Your own instincts, your own...
Yes, trained instincts, yeah. cultivated responses yeah. about what should be happening at any point in time in a game. And it's impressive. I mean, that's the best word I can come up with. It's absolutely impressive. And I didn't even feel this way when I played Demon Souls that I borrowed from you. It didn't strike me in quite the same way. There's something else about the world design of this game that's mm-hmm. just different enough early enough on mm-hmm. that it's doing this to me and that I'm being presented with options that I think are really, really fun. I don't know. No zealot like a convert, obviously, but there is no one to whom I would not recommend this game.
Right. Anyway, that's going to do it for this episode of In-Game Chat. Thanks, everybody, for joining us in the chat room, as everybody listening on the stream and on the radio as well. Thanks to everybody who grabs us every week from iTunes or now our YouTube channel or however you get the show for later on. Really appreciate it. Don't forget to join us on Twitter, Facebook, our forums at ColonyOfGamers.com. Subscribe to our YouTube channel. And if you're on Steam, we've got a Steam group you can join up with over there and play games with us and other listeners. And then check out our Minecraft server at play.ingamechat.net. Thanks, everybody. We will see you next Saturday.